Welcome back to The Streak Easy, our brand new podcast all about the legacy of The Undertaker at WrestleMania and his undefeated streak. I am Pixel Dan.
Jonathan Leonard.
And Jaron McCaffrey.
What's going on, guys?
You know it, man.
It's exciting times. This is our second episode of this brand new sub-series that we're doing, which is a spin-off of our main show, the Geek Easy Podcast. And it's been a lot of fun going back and just watching all of the old Undertaker matches from WrestleMania. It's kind of the ones that we're going to talk about today, because we started this off by talking about four matches in one episode. So we've got three today. And it kind of really dawned on me today, like, how we're seeing some serious progression.
Yeah.
Just like, in such rapid succession, it's like you can see the times are changing around everything. It's kind of amazing. And
this episode is super interesting, I think, because this is like legitimately we watch the bridge from the cartooning, the new generation era to the Attitude Era.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You see the bridge, and at the same time, you really get a sense of Undertaker's overall development, both in his character, and you see like his in-ring skills, I feel like, just get like a little more crisp with like, I feel like he gets more comfortable with the way he works as the Undertaker, obviously, since the very first match that we watched with him at WrestleMania. You know what I mean?
Oh, for
like,
sure.
Like, we noticed when we were talking about those that like you could still see in those early matches like the same stuff. But, like, by the time we get specifically to the Kane match that I want to talk about, I feel like it's just like, man, there he is.
Yeah.
Like, there he is.
Well, there's the, you know, he's also working longer, more prominent matches
with,
you know, more prominent workers.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a whole shift in just design of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Agreed. And actually, the three matches today all have something very much in common. They are all big man matches.
Yeah.
They're all Undertaker versus another dude who's the same size or bigger than him. And I think as we find out when we talk about it, there's a lot of similarities with these three matches as a result.
Yeah.
You think?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Right. Well, I took some notes on some of that
stuff. I'll be interested to hear, because I was actually very surprised at what different opinions I had on these matches.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm real excited to get through these talks then. So let's go ahead and just dive right in. We're going to kick things off in the year 1996, which is WrestleMania 12, The Undertaker versus Diesel, which is really, really fun stuff, actually. I really enjoyed watching this.
Let me lead off. So legitimately, so first of all, I have to say that I was a huge Diesel fan.
Okay.
I had kind of some like in and out periods in wrestling.
Yeah.
One of my in periods was the first time I accidentally saw Diesel, and I really can't tell you what it was, but I was like, "Holy cow, that dude!
Yeah.
Look at that dude!"
Yeah.
And
I think that's what it was.
I don't remember what he was doing that I saw.
Okay.
Like, I don't remember what match or if it was. My guess is that it was that Royal Rumble, I think 94, where he had the real big run and where he initiated the Diesel spot in Royal Rumbles.
Okay, yeah.
And he cleared a bunch of guys out.
Yeah,
and
because when did he and Razor show up in the WWF? Because this is right before they left in this match.
And this one is right before they left, yes.
Yeah.
They showed up at different times. Razor had been there for a while. Oof. Razor was there by 92. I think Diesel came in 93.
Okay.
But like at opposite ends of the year too, so there's almost 2 years between them, I think.
Yeah,
I would have to verify that for sure.
But he had obviously established himself. He'd
yes.
been there for a while at this point.
Yeah. Well, he had established himself as. Diesel went very much from being Shawn Michaels' bodyguard to like a world title contender. He made that jump.
A lot of guys make that jump real quick because the storyline needs it, but they can't maintain it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's...
which you might be able to argue
that
was the issue with Kevin Nash, but...
Fair enough.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, so getting back on track, no offense. I was a huge Diesel fan. Still am. Mm-hmm. And I also, this match makes it on to like my top five all-time matches.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I love this match so much. Man, watching Diesel come to the ring was I was blown away, and not just in like a, I mean, there's definitely a little bit of, oh yeah, I'm 14 right again.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure,
yeah,
for sure, yeah. There was some of that. But it's also great to see Kevin Nash before he was Kevin Nash.
Yeah,
totally.
When he left the company, and he'll talk about it. You know, when he left the company, he lost a little something. You know, he moved for the money and for the schedule, not for the love of the business or because he thought he could do anything particularly special in WCW. Right. And you can see the difference. And, yeah. And I think it's real evident watching him come to the ring at WrestleMania to face The Undertaker.
Yeah.
You know, and he knew that spot. You know, he's one of the guys, when he comes out, he looks like he's in the streak before it was the streak.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. I was super excited about that. I caught Lawler. I thought it was funny. It just stood out to me. Lawler was saying something about the plagues and talked about the slaying of the firstborn.
Oh, I totally missed that.
Yeah, yeah. he was like, I think he, because you know, and it was just a quick throwaway line, but it just seemed so intense. You know, like it jumped out to me. You know, because he was talking about how
step too far, Jerry Lawler.
Yeah. So I just wanted to kick that off. This match, I love this match.
Awesome.
While you're talking about things you call on commentary, I thought it was funny because Lawler also made a comment about 13-13 Mockingbird Lane,
yep.
Just as Heenan had the match before in the WrestleMania the year prior. So I doubt that was an actual callback. It sounded pretty organic at the time, and I doubt anyone in the world who wasn't watching them back-to-back would have ever noticed, but we did, so I thought it was funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, like, Diesel thinks he's on 13-13 Mockingbird Lane, or just something like that. I was like, yay! I get that reference! I wrote down that the entrance theatrics for The Undertaker are really starting to, like, they're there now. Like, you mentioned in the last match that we watched that you could see it really starting to develop.
Yep.
And I feel like we're, like, on that, like, trajectory now of him getting, like, the long entrance at WrestleMania. You know, because there was lots of smoke and the lights were out. And this was the first time we saw him do the corner post thing where he made the lights come up. And they had that big, fancy lighting rig.
The big circular rig,
came down in front of him and, like, shined the lights on him while the smoke was billowing up. So I was like, yeah, this is, here we go. Like, they're really starting to amp up the theatrics for The Undertaker. I also wrote down that Nash makes The Undertaker look small.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's that moment where they're first in the ring and they're face-to-face, and, like, Nash is huge.
Yeah, man.
He's so big. And Taker's a big dude.
Yeah.
And when you look at those two side-by-side, it's like, that's insane to me.
Right.
It's insane. Which, that comes back a little later, too, because I mentioned something about that.
Yeah. Well, you can really hear, Nash is huge and Nash is built well,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you can really hear, I noticed a lot, just how enamored Vince was with Kevin Nash, you know, even at this point, knowing that he was on his way out, you can just hear it in his voice and the way he talks about Nash and the things he says.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Did Vince know he was on the way out?
Oh yeah, they were on the way out. Nash always tells the story that when he told Vince he was leaving, Vince said, "Okay, I want you to put over the Taker at Mania, put over Shawn, and put over Warrior." And Nash said, "Well, you know, Taker it'd be an honor. Shawn, of course, he's my boy. Warrior can go over on me if he can take one on me."
Amazing.
<Yeah. laughs> one of my favorite Kevin Nash stories.
All right, so getting into the match.
Before we get into the match.
All right, yeah.
Is this not Taker's best look ever?
No, this is my favorite Undertaker look.
For sure.
I love this look.
For sure.
This is like the trench coat, purple gloves, like the long black hair.
Yeah.
Like this was my Taker, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, this era right here was where I was already like super mark for Taker. So, like, yeah, when I think of my favorite Undertaker, this is definitely it.
Yeah,
definitely.
He's got he's kind of wearing the face. You know, they pale him out and you know, black his eyes a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not guyliner.
Right.
You
right,
know what I
yeah.
mean? Yeah. He's got the gloves still, but they're the. He looked amazing.
It's the perfect look. Because there's a point, like, I mean, there's probably a point where they overdo it, but I wouldn't jump out and just say that there's a point where it gets really, like, overdone. But there's definitely a point where it gets farther than pretty quickly coming.
Yeah.
Where it just starts to get, oh, you know, it's at least looking at overdone. You
yeah.
know? But this is right in that sweet spot. Yeah.
It's looking over the fence at too far. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Sweet spot for sure. This is awesome Taker.
Yeah. Which also brought me to a realization as I'm looking at the Undertaker and Kevin Nash standing apart from each other. One of the things I look for in a wrestling match is when there is a clear difference in the wrestlers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mentioned it when we were talking about Wrestle Kingdom, how Tanahashi looked you know, just like a real life samurai pop idol, you know, just amazing. And you know, who do you wrestle? Omega looked like just a, you know, scumbag,
right?
American,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah,
I love when there is that dichotomy.
Yeah.
And one of the things I realized, the Undertaker's gimmick pretty much creates that dichotomy with almost anybody he's in the ring with.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And
gotcha.
I thought that was really something noteworthy for me, because I'd kind of felt that, you know, like I was thinking about that. I was like, oh man, you know, this is, well, he kind of has that with everybody. There's nobody like the Undertaker. Well, except
Giant Gonzalez.
Well, except Giant Gonzalez. Well,
what about the other Undertaker?
I was gonna say, except the Undertaker and Kane,
the Underfaker.
You know, yeah. But for the most part, you know, he creates that dichotomy with everybody. I thought that was kind of cool. Okay, now we can get to the match.
Now we can get to the match. Cool. Well, I like how Diesel's character is not scared of the Undertaker.
At all.
Not even kind of.
Yeah.
So, like, any of the stuff that normally intimidates everybody else, we've seen him wrestle at WrestleMania so far, Diesel is not having it.
Right.
And, like, the match immediately starts with him, like, Diesel just straight cutting Taker off and, like, going to work on him. And, like, he bumps him right away, and Taker immediately does the sit-up, and Diesel doesn't care and jumps right back on him again.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool because that's the first time we've seen that
with
all of these matches. That's
yeah.
the first time that's happened. And then Taker immediately cuts that off and goes straight into the Shine from there, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, I think they get into a fight on the outside, and Taker gets on top. And then we lost the camera feed? Was that like that on, like...
Yes.
Like, because there was, like, a long stretch where it's, like, blacked out, and you just hear them talking about what's going on, and I'm going, what's happening right now? Like, this is old stuff, so obviously that's not, like, something wrong. Like, apparently that's just on the network that way.
Yep.
That's super weird. I wonder if they just are missing a complete...
Well, it all depends on what copy they use.
Yeah.
So
must have been
if
like
they
the
yeah
pay-per-view feed or something. Cut
maybe
or something.
Maybe, I don't know.
Weird.
Or a bad VHS copy they uploaded.
I wrote down I love the dodge the crossbody spot where the guy just moves out of the way and Taker just eats it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why that makes me laugh every time because it looks so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they totally did that because Taker was, you know, it was like shine, shine, shine all the way outside of the ring, and he gets him in the ring and he's off the ropes and Taker goes for that crossbody and Nash is just like, nope.
Yeah.
And moves and Taker just eats it. And I was like, I was cracking up. I don't know why, but that's really funny.
Well, man, how well are these guys moving?
I know.
Yeah.
Nash. And Taker, you know, like we've seen Undertaker not move like that before.
Yeah.
You know, and probably, I mean, I guess we can assume it's the guys he's with.
Yeah.
But man, him and Taker are moving, and this is the good way when big men move like small men. Like, this is how you want to see it. You
yes.
know, like I don't want to see Taker doing Hurricanranas, you know what I mean? But
and shooting stars.
Yeah,
and
you know.
Like,
but they're in there moving.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the we've seen them continuously try to pit monsters against him, but they are the, you know, the King Kong Bundys,
right?
Like the guys who are just like size is their only thing. This is the first Mania match, at least we get to, where it's a guy of, you know, similar size, but it's another guy who can really, like, is in his prime.
Oh, yeah.
And can really work.
Yes.
And can do all that move. So I think it loosens up Taker also, because there's no reason for him to do some of this, to be able to move like that against a Giant Gonzalez or a King Kong Bundy. You know, you gotta kind of keep it in the realm of what you're wrestling with, you know. Yep. But now they can really open up all cylinders, yeah, and go at it.
Yep.
And
absolutely,
it's really fun to watch, and it really shines through how good they both are.
How good they both are. Yeah. Yes.
During the heat, when Nash finally slows him down, I wrote down that there was a rest in peace chant. I feel like that's like, I don't remember that being a thing, yeah, but like the crowd, the whole time Diesel's working the heat, they're going, rest in peace, rest in peace. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of awesome. Like, I don't feel like that. I don't know. Where did that go?
Right.
Like, I don't know what happened to that.
I'll never remember hearing that before.
Let's bring it back.
Yeah, we should bring that back. That's just a chant you don't ever hear. I got nothing else in the middle there. Do you have anything else specific you wanted to...
Nothing really in the middle.
They really slowed it down there.
Yeah.
Like this was pretty standard, I feel like, heat work, where Diesel just kind of kept Taker grounded, just kind of worked slow. And they did a lot of cutoff stuff where he immediately would just put him back down.
Yeah.
And I like Diesel sold a lot to the crowd too during, yeah, all this, which I liked quite a bit.
Well, they're not allowed to do that anymore, so it's nice to see it.
Yeah.
You know, it's because that's part of wrestling, man.
It is.
You know, they're
not allowed to play to the crowd.
Play to the crowd like that.
Because the show is for the audience
for
on TV.
Yeah.
You can play to the crowd at the house shows, but not on TV ever. Is,
yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. you don't think about it. Now you'll, yeah, never unsee it. You know, that's one of those things. But anyway, you know, I gotta say, I don't feel like there's anything conventional to this match.
Okay, well, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I wanted to, I totally forgot to point out, but like the whole opening spot with Taker getting his shine almost felt like Taker was just straight doing the heat for a long time, because a lot of that match was just him schooling Diesel and keeping him grounded and keeping him down. You know what I mean? Like that,
yeah,
whole opening spot. Because for a while I was just like, I guess Taker's just working the heat for this match. All right. But then eventually they flipped it. And,
yeah,
then we started seeing like the sleepers and stuff like that. But I did feel like that's a little out of the norm for what you would typically see for like a standard,
yeah,
babyface heel scenario.
Right. Well, I really feel like, and one of the reasons this match makes it onto my top five list is I feel like this match is, you know, next level storytelling. Like this is, they put the story before the structure, the moves, before anything else in the match. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to tell the story of, look, this guy is not scared of The Undertaker. And with good reason, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
he's
bigger.
Yeah, you know, he hits the jackknife. Like yeah, he just hits the jackknife, like, out of nowhere. And, like, in the middle of the match.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And then completely just, you know, he doesn't go for the cover. He doesn't, he calls for the sit-up.
Yeah, that's what, because before they did that, they did that weird spot where they both punched each other at the same time, and then both
and then the big booted each other at the same time.
That double big boot
was
beautiful.
Which was awesome, yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
But Nash just popped straight back up to his feet, and then Taker did the sit-up, and that got a great reaction. But it was right after that sit-up, it was just like jackknife out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was like literally they got up, and Nash is like, nope, jackknife powerbomb. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was super cool.
Yeah.
He sat up again shortly after,
yep,
that, and Diesel still didn't care.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, no matter how often that happened,
yeah,
like, there was no change. Like, Diesel, like, never got scared or spooked. He was just, like, jumped back on him again. Because it was right after the second sit-up, he got him with a second jackknife,
yeah,
powerbomb.
Well, that was after he hit the first. He was sitting there calling,
yeah,
him to sit,
yeah,
up. He was,
yeah,
calling,
yeah,
for the,
yeah,
sit-up.
He was like, yeah.
I loved it, man.
Oh, it was so cool.
Yeah.
He was like, go ahead, do it again, do it again. Up, doesn't care, picks him up, jackknife.
Yep.
It was amazing. Yeah, that was good stuff.
What else you got?
So it was right after that he kicked out again, and then that's where we got the choke slam spot, which I thought was a little weird looking.
Yeah,
like he hit that choke slam on Nash, and I don't know if it was because Nash was so big and he was trying to like adjust for that and make it mean something more, but he totally did it kind of Big Show style where like he fell down with it, but it looked awkward to me.
Yeah,
like it didn't look like a
yeah,
very slick choke slam.
It's one of those things that's tough to know if that was if he was doing it because he was selling,
right?
Or if Nash is just big and heavy,
and he just felt, yeah, I couldn't figure it out. Right. I was like, I don't know how that was supposed to go, but yeah, it was super awkward looking. But I think that pretty much took it into the go home from there, right? Because it was right after the choke slam.
Yeah, he pretty much picks him up, and
he picks him straight up for the tombstone. Well, he does the throat thing, picks him up for the tombstone, and this was super scary looking because Nash is so much bigger than Undertaker. The way he had to hold him for that tombstone was unlike I've seen him really hold anybody else. Because Nash's legs were like just off to the side and like hanging all weird and sideways, and then when he dropped him, it looked like it was right on top of his like his body crumpled. And he fell down, and I was like, "Oh no!"
Like I was shuddering just when he picked him up. I'm like, I know he's fine.
Yeah,
I know he's gonna live through it, but I don't feel like he's gonna live through it.
it was a scary looking tombstone.
Yeah,
but that gave us the 1-2-3, and yeah, that was a super solid match.
I love that match so much.
I had so much fun with that one.
Yeah, this is high on my recommend list.
Yeah,
go check out.
And you know,
Taker Diesel.
I don't know. I feel like I've seen this match, but I don't think I saw it live. I don't think I was watching at the time when this happened.
Yeah.
And that's the only one going back and watching all three of these. I don't think I had ever even seen the other two.
Yeah.
This one I'm pretty sure I had seen.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a fun era for me right here because this is going back and catching up on some of the stuff I missed now.
Totally.
So, and it's always fun to go back and watch ones like this that are, I mean, like the really good matches anyway.
Yeah.
So don't mind watching this one again. I actually watched it a couple of times.
I was going to say, you know, the other thing about this is the only time they ever wrestled.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
Taker,
wow.
Taker and Diesel, this is, I can't swear this is the only time, the only match they ever had. It probably wasn't. They probably did this match all the way around the loop leading up to it.
I'm sure they did that.
Yeah. But, like, any high pro, like, there's no rematch. There's no, this is not a rematch. You know, there's no Survivor Series where they wrestle for the championship. There's no In Your House. Yeah. There's no Raw where it's, Taker and Diesel. No, like, this is it for them. This is their match.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Super cool. Well, definitely worth checking out. This is one of the good Undertaker matches that I think you guys should watch from WrestleMania. Like, if you want to watch some good streak matches, make sure this one's on the list, I'd say, for sure. So that brings us into 1997, WrestleMania 13 versus Psycho Sid.
From a high to a low.
Okay, so I'm gonna throw this out right now.
Yep.
I liked this better than I thought I was going to.
I will back that up.
I remember hating this, even though this is like Taker's night.
Right.
Like his crowning moment of getting the belt.
Yeah.
But I remember not liking it. When I watched it this time, I enjoyed a lot more of it than I thought I was going to.
I'm not saying I would have booked this match. I'm not saying that I like Sid Vicious all of a sudden or anything like that. But I think I have just such vitriol for how much I didn't like him as a kid. And I never really went back and watched a lot of his stuff when I got older. But I never saw anything that made me go, oh, this guy can really work. He wasn't very good.
Yeah.
You know? But so going into this, I was expecting just an absolute turd.
Yeah.
And then I watched and I was like, yeah, that was, well, you know, that was passable.
I am also right off the heels of listening to the Bruce Pritchard podcast about Sid.
Okay, me too.
And it kind of made me go into this going, well, this is going to be the worst because I just listened to that episode about Sid. But I did like Sid's work in this better than I thought. I do, however, have some other gripes that I'm going to bring up about somebody else that I already have an opinion about.
Yeah.
So anyway.
All right. Let me kick off a couple things real quick.
Okay.
First of all, Taker comes to the ring. Did you notice people were holding up lighters? Mm-hmm. Not their cell phones.
People were holding up lighters. Wow, that really dates it, right?
Yeah, yep. So that I noticed that.
You know, like I still get thrown off when it's the cell phone. That's not the right term, but I still look at that as people doing the lighters.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just cell phones now.
Well, see. I guess I had that opposite reaction because my first thought, like, when I came out and I saw the lights in the crowd, and my first thought was like, this is too early for the. who has a cell phone like it? You know what I mean? I was like, there's no way. And then I was like, oh, wait, that's a light. Those are lighters.
Those are orange flames.
Yeah, those are, yeah. Oh, wow,
that's,
yeah.
That's how that started.
Yeah, that's I remember that. So I noticed that.
No Paul Bearer.
No Paul Bearer.
For the first time at WrestleMania.
Oh, okay. I didn't really pay attention to that.
Came up by himself.
Okay.
I also noticed immediately that he was wearing the gray gloves and gray boots, and then noticed that he had the tattered sleeve shirt. And right after I wrote that down, Vince McMahon said, he's wearing his original gear from 1991. Yeah. And like, I was like, oh, okay, all right, that's a thing.
Yeah.
he's wearing his original outfit. Yeah. Obviously, there was a reason for it. It was like a symbolic thing for his night here. So that was cool. That was kind of neat to see. Did you also notice that they called it an undefeated streak at WrestleMania this time? Mm-hmm. I think this is the first time they've actually really called it an undefeated streak.
Yeah.
Did he actually say streak? Like, he definitely referenced it. I don't remember hearing the word streak.
I thought so. I wrote it down.
Yeah. Because I wrote it down as him having mentions that he's never lost at WrestleMania as The Undertaker. Because that's what really caught my ear. Because he specified as The Undertaker. I'm like,
well,
has he lost as something else?
He said has The Undertaker. Never lost at WrestleMania has The Undertaker.
Oh.
Which is a Vince McMahon pattern of speech.
Okay. Well, it was JR, though, who said it.
Which is who I meant.
Okay.
Which is who I meant.
My God!
Okay, well, that makes way more sense.
My God, pal.
We're just mixing it together now. Oh, amazing.
That makes way more sense then that I just misheard it, because it totally does sound like something JR would say, and now his sentence works.
Yep. And he said that often. It's stuff like that often, so.
Hey, is Sid Vicious just straight up a jacked up Michael Rooker or what?
Oh, my God. I thought Michael Rooker was a pretty jacked up Michael Rooker.
Well, yeah. Until you look at Sid Vicious.
Yeah.
I wrote down that I was pretty sure Sid was lost while he was coming through the entryway. Like, he looked like he opened the wrong door and wasn't sure if it was like he was going through the right area. Like, seriously, he's coming through the entryway like... And then he gets out and he's like, oh, yeah, this is it. And then walks like, that's what he looked like.
And then he gets lost on his way down the aisle. Like, he just starts wandering one way and, like turns back and goes to the other side of the ring. He's an idiot, man. His music is awesome. Bananas.
I loved
his music, though.
Yeah.
He just looks like wrestling. He does
look like wrestling.
Dude, he is giant. He is jacked. He looks like an insane person. If you saw him on the subway, I'd leave the city. Yeah. Like.
Oh, man. So it's worth noting that Shawn Michaels is on commentary for this match.
He's so bad.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I don't even know why that, because this was right after he lost his smile, right?
Yeah.
I was saying, like, he's not really, like, doing anything to promote the match at all. Like,
well, I mean, he talks about how great The Undertaker is a lot. But, yeah.
Well, you know, my problem is that he just totally undercut the feel of the match.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got The Undertaker versus Psycho Sid. And then you've got Shawn Michaels doing his thing, talking about The Undertaker and what a bad man The Undertaker is. But he's got to go up against Sid Vicious tonight. Ooh, buddy. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I know.
Like, Shawn.
Like, yeah. Well, that's exactly like my point is, like, it's just like he's just sitting there doing his shtick.
Yeah.
Like, that's not helping anything.
Yeah.
You know, like, I appreciate that you also can't come down there and just sit there and be. Just
Shawn
a normal Hickenbottom. Commentator,
right.
Who happens to be Shawn Michaels. So why are you there in the first place?
Of all the matches they could have had him come. I mean, I guess it's one of those things where it's like a lose-lose. Because, like, how lame would it be if they're just like, oh, here's Shawn Michaels commentating this this eight-man cluster muck in the middle of, you know.
Was that the one, too, that had, like, the tag team
that's why
number one contendership thing at the very beginning?
Yeah, that's why the whole outside of the ring is covered in white powder
oh
during this
God.
Match. Did you not notice
no,
that?
No, I didn't know
Yeah, man. The whole, because I kept noticing, I was like, man, I kept thinking, like, I would be so mad. Yeah. I would be so mad. Because it is. Like, they roll outside and they start fighting all around the ring. Maybe I'm getting ahead of us. But everything is covered in white powder. You know, it looks like a building fell down out there. Like, it's just, you know, I'm like, goodness gracious.
Great.
But they had all that stuff, and I think they had some powder and a bunch of, and they would gimmick stuff with powder so it would poof when it exploded
back then. Right, right.
You know, so that street fight.
Oh, gosh.
Those were gimmicks?
Yeah, bro. Okay, so right before the match even starts, Bret Hart comes stomping down to the ring.
Yeah, man.
And I wrote down, Bret, ugh. And then I put, ha, real talk by Sean. Because,
Bret just comes out and Bret's everywhere.
Yeah, because that's literally what he does. Yeah. But it's amazing because Bret comes stomping down to the ring and Sean goes, oh, imagine that. Bret Hart's upset that he's not in the main event of WrestleMania. And I was cracking up because I was like, that's real talk right there.
Right.
Like, I know that's real talk.
Yeah.
And then Bret gets on the mic and immediately goes over to Sean. And says some stupid stuff to him.
Your little pussy foot injury.
Yeah, and then goes over to Taker and says some stupid stuff to him.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Because I took notes.
Okay, all right.
So first of all, my favorite part when he goes to Sean is that McMahon, they cut to this shot of McMahon.
Yes!
Like holding Sean back, and McMahon's going, no, no, don't do it, no. And Sean is as casual as ever, completely no-selling Bret. And he's just going, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's so...
It's amazing.
Yeah. It just undercuts everything Bret was trying to do, you know. And what... I don't know if they expected Sean to get fired up or if... I don't know. But it just completely did not work. So then he goes to the Taker. Bret goes to Taker. And I'll never forget how... I'll never forget. I wrote down. It was ridiculous because he goes... What did he say? You didn't just slam the door on my head. You slammed the door on our friendship.
Yeah.
And they just show that the Undertaker just like stares him down like, that dude ain't got no friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's
you know, I know Bret still operates in the realm, and I love Bret Hart, but I know Bret still operates in the realm of wrestling where like all the good guys are friends.
Yeah.
Undertaker ain't got no friend.
Yeah,
Undertaker won your friend Hitman.
Right.
Like, sorry, bro.
I guess it's fair to say that earlier in the night was the double turn with Bret and Stone Cold in that amazing match that they had.
Yes.
But I still found all of this totally unnecessary.
Totally unnecessary.
Completely ridiculous.
Bad.
Like,
he interrupted the stare down.
Yeah.
Because Bret and Sid, or not Bret's,
Taker
and Sid had stepped to each other.
Yeah.
And that, like, it was intense.
Yeah.
You know, and like just as you were about to get that feeling, like, oh my gosh, look at it. Oh, what's Bret? Here comes Bret Hart. What's he doing? You know what I mean? Like,
here comes Bret spewing everything that he's still talking about on the internet today. Like, it just, like, yeah. Because I wrote that down.
This is the start of Bret's gimmick.
Yeah, because he trash talked Sean.
He was ahead of his time.
Yeah,
he could have been sitting in his living room saying all of that into a box on his desk.
Yes, yes.
He would have been, but he couldn't, so he had to go to WrestleMania.
He says that nonsense to Taker about not being friends. Then he goes over to Sid and says some stupid stuff to him about whatever.
Right.
And I just wrote down, this feels like a real Bret shoot. I for sure believe that he for sure believes everything he's saying right now.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's... It literally sounds like the same stuff he's always complaining about in every shoot interview.
Yeah.
It was totally unnecessary. And I was mad.
Because
I was like, we don't need this in this main event match with these two dudes.
Right.
Ready to have a good... I just...
Well,
I don't know.
So
upset.
What about how, first of all, Sid is the only one who sold any of it.
And then Sid beat him up, though.
Yeah, and then Sid kicks him and power bombs him and gets a huge face pop right before he has to, like...
He beats up Bret and grabs the mic and he says, get your whiny ass out of here.
Yeah.
And the whole crowd pops and I'm cracking up because now I want that quote from Sid to accompany the end of every Bret Hart shoot promo. Because I just want every Bret Hart shoot needs to end with Sid going, get your whiny ass out of here.
That clip.
Ridiculous.
It's the most I've ever liked Sid.
It was just insane, man.
I know. I was like, he's a face now. Woohoo. Oh my goodness. Okay. Unreal.
Yeah. I even wrote in the notes, why did we just go ahead and turn Sid face right before this? Like, what did we do?
I
Hey, foreshadowing though, because that happens two matches in a row.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. why I'll talk about that when we get there.
Yes.
Super weird, and it doesn't matter because Undertaker's
over
like Rover.
Yeah,
you know
he's untouchable.
Yeah, but
good rhyme.
He just came up with that.
Nobody's
ever said that before. All right, so we get into the final, the start of the match.
All right, so you love this match.
Okay,
Not
what either of us said.
Okay,
that's
so
what I heard. I don't know about our listeners.
So this match, unlike the one before it, this match starts with Sid going straight into the heat.
Yep.
He jumps straight in, starts working over Taker, and pretty early on we get a bear hug.
Well, there ain't no shine to follow Bret Hart, brother.
I know, right? Too late. So we get a bear hug, and I wrote down, there's that rest in peace chant again.
Because
started doing it again while he was in that bear hug. Go. And I'm seriously like, these might be the only 2 years people ever chanted that. Because I don't remember it, and I bet we never hear it again after this.
Until we bring it back.
But I love too, because, okay, so they start working a spot. Like, he breaks out of that bear hug, and they're doing a rope running spot. And they do the spot where Taker does the over-the-top rope spill and lands on his feet. Except when they do it, Sid just runs over and straight just pushes him over the top rope.
Yeah.
And it looks so like, dude, what the hell? Because he's just like,
muh.
Yeah. And just shoves him over the top rope, which was awesome, though, because he still landed on his feet. But I also wrote down that I felt like the crowd seemed pretty hot for this open, for so like they were into it, and I don't know if it was, I don't know why exactly or what it was about it, or if it was just because Taker was out there.
Yeah,
but it was noticeably like they were up to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wrote it down.
It's the main event of a WrestleMania.
And then I wrote down, I am the table, because Taker didn't break that table.
He
bounced right off of it.
Dude, well, he fell over it.
Yeah.
That was another one. Sid just ran up and pushed him. Yeah. And he just fell backwards. Like, that looked ugly. You know, he just fell backwards right on top of his head.
It
you know.
So painful.
Yeah. You know he was on the other side of that. Mad.
Oh, it was that whole thing where, like, you saw his back, like, bend over the corner of the table, and the table kind of bowed,
yeah.
But then popped back up.
And then he
slid over and landed on his head, and the table came down on top of him. Like, the whole thing was gross.
Hey, it's always funny when the table doesn't break.
I know.
Always, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah.
Hey, so
feels real good too.
So that was the one quote I liked from Shawn Michaels, because he goes, "I'm never sitting at that table." It always happens to those guys. Like, yep.
That's for sure. That's a fact.
Because it was the Spanish announced table.
Yeah, that was always our
listeners. Yeah,
that was always the joke for a long time. I just wrote down randomly bad power slam. I always nitpick power slams.
Everything was bad. Yeah, you do. You do always nitpick power slams.
Well, I don't like the ones that just like where they just kind of pick them up and then like set them down sideways. Like, I don't know. I like the flip on a power slam. But
so do you have anything in the middle? Anything else in the middle?
I love the clothesline every time. Taker hit the big giant clothesline.
Oh, the big flying clothesline.
At some point, I'm going to have to admit, I don't like that clothesline.
You don't like that clothesline?
Yeah, I don't.
And that's just one of the, I don't know, I love it. I love seeing him pull it off every time. It's just kind of one of those neat, yay, Taker moments.
It just always looks awkward to me, and a lot of times it looks like the contact isn't as heavy as, like, the move or the pop. But I mean, but the crowd pops, people love it. I'm not, it doesn't take me out of the match or anything like that. It's just never, I don't know, I didn't do it.
So right after that, though, like, he hits that big clothesline, and Sid totally just stands right up.
Yeah.
It's like, so he hits
Sid don't sell, brother.
Yeah, I was going to say, Sid no-sold the heck out of that giant clothesline and immediately picked him up, and it was, like, sleeper hold time. So we had Taker grounded again. Did you guys notice when he had him? I don't know if you guys were watching the crowd during this, but everybody in the crowd stood up and started looking off to the right during the sleeper hold segment, and then the guy in the front row has a camera and he starts like snapping pictures off that direction. So I wrote down, what the heck is going on? That's captured everybody's attention.
Yeah. Usually, either fighting the crowd or some chick showing her goods.
Yeah, so something like that's going on. Where they just completely lost the crowd. Because literally for the entire sleeper hold segment, the whole crowd's going like this.
Yeah.
Looking over to the right, trying to figure out what was going on.
They lost the crowd before. I mean, they didn't. This match terrible.
Okay, well,
I think Sid looks so bad in this match. He didn't sell anything. When he did sell, it did not look. You know, it looked like he was getting punched. And this I'm trying to say this to explain a style of the way he was selling. Like, it looked like he was getting hit by Ric Flair, not punched by The Undertaker. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that makes sense to any of our listeners. But, you know, it just didn't look... I didn't think he sold well. I didn't think he sold at all. When he sold, I didn't think he sold well. I just thought he looked bad. So bad. I felt like you could see Taker getting frustrated with him.
Uh-huh. I could get that a little bit in there, I feel like. I wrote down at one part that Taker hit a power slam that looked like somebody didn't hear the spot because it was real weird and sloppy and kind of like stalled. Like, it was one of those things where like Sid came off the rope and kind of stopped and stood there, and the Taker just like grabbed him and power slammed him. So it was like one of those things where somebody missed a call somewhere. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was definitely a couple of flub spots. I can't argue with any points that you're saying. Sid, don't sell.
Yeah.
Sid's not that good.
No.
You know? All I can say is, man, that was way better than I would have given it credit for being going in. Like, that's not an admission of being great by any means. That's just going, you know, I mean, maybe it's just because The Undertaker's so good.
Right.
You know, because he could put on a passable match with a lot of people. He pulled one out of Sid.
If you say something, man, I did not find it to be passable.
They did the double boot spot again.
Yeah,
which again, well, like, is another one of those things that I feel like probably isn't awkward if you're not watching them back to back. Like, if you're watching them the year in between, not awkward at all.
Yeah.
But when you're watching them back to back and you start seeing the repeats.
Well, I never have a problem with repeats. Like so that didn't bother me. I was just checked out by then, so I was like, oh, double boot. All right, good job. Oh, Sid's actually laying down. Okay, well, that's nice.
Yeah, not very long.
I mean,
that immediately, they did the double boot spot.
And he did.
And then I wrote down, Sid still has control. Lots of heat in this match, I wrote down.
Yep. He did 15.
Then I wrote, oh no, Sid, don't break your leg, because he started jumping off the second rope.
Dude, he did 15 of those double axe handles off the rope, off the middle rope, man.
I wrote, what even is this move? Because he was like jumping off and just kind of like doing this to Taker. He wasn't really doing a move. He was like jumping off the second rope and like pushing Taker down.
Yeah.
It looked really bad. But that's where we finally got the sit-up. Like, he did, like, 15 of those.
Yeah.
And then Taker did the sit-up, which is where we go into the go-home shtick, finally. So they do the, like, well, I thought it was funny because this was all heat. And Taker finally does the sit-up after that and immediately picks him up for a tombstone.
Yeah.
Like, there is, like, no other real work there. It's just like, all right, tombstone time.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, okay, so surely this is where we're going, huh? So he picks him up for the tombstone, and they do, like, the classic backflip thing. And Sid gives him a tombstone, which is gross. Like he spikes Taker with that tombstone.
Well, let's also at the very least, give Sid the props that I'm pretty sure he's the only one that's ever done that, like, clean, you know, there's always like a lot of wobble and a lot of, are they going to make it?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Sid just boom, picked him straight up
and then dropped him right down on the dome. But this is where Brett came running back out. And I immediately wrote, is this a no DQ match? Because he ran straight in and just started whooping up on Sid in front of the ref.
With a chair.
Yeah. And the ref's just like...
Well, it was no DQ, wasn't it?
And I was going to ask, did they announce this as a no DQ match?
I don't remember them.
I thought they did.
They would have had to have.
Yeah.
I mean, this was definitely in the era... Like by the time we got to this era, they treated most title matches, especially in the main event, as... no DQ matches. Okay. Like, especially if it was outside the ring. If it was outside the ring, the ref would not DQ in a title match.
Yeah.
So he beats up Sid with a chair.
I wasn't surprised to see it.
Yeah.
That's why I can't remember when I heard it, but it didn't throw me off, so that's why I'm assuming it. I knew at some point.
Yeah. Well, you would see all the time in this era where, like, a title match would spill outside the ring and start fighting all through the crowd, and the ref would just follow them.
Yeah.
You know, and tell them to get back in the ring.
All right, guys, go back.
Right,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. What are you doing out here? You're crazy.
Okay. Very lethargic ref.
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
That's how poor Danny Early would do it.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn and back into the ring.
So Brett's beating up on Sid with a chair, which is so stupid. And then that, so Sid like gets beat up with a chair and then turns into a choke slam from the Taker. And Taker hits him with a choke slam and goes for the pin, which gets a near fall, which actually got a good reaction from the crowd because it was one of those whoa moments. So then Brett's right back again, beats up Sid some more, allowing Sid to turn around into a tombstone for the 1-2-3. And I just wrote, go away, Brett. The ref did a slow count for some reason for the three, which I don't understand what the whole point was unless it was supposed to be dramatic. But, like, we didn't need the dramatic count because it was like, oh, Brett distracted Sid and allowed The Undertaker to tombstone him. Yeah. This is not how The Undertaker needed to win a title.
Right.
This is ridiculous. Go home, Bret Hart. You're drunk.
In fairness, I appreciate where you're coming from there, but I doubt Bret Hart booked that.
I bet he had all these ideas.
I don't. To my understanding, Bret didn't have that many ideas.
Yeah.
In WCW, he didn't have that many ideas. I don't know.
I feel like there's probably. I mean, this is on the precipice of the era where everything is a run-in. Everything has, you know, like like this read very much like Russo writing to me.
Okay.
Because, you know, we got to have, there's got to be, there's got to be, well, not, well, the match did enough trash, but, you know, there had to be Gaga, there had to be circus to it, there had to be, you know, all this surrounding it. It couldn't just be, you know, two guys having a match because nobody cares about the wrestling, bro.
Bro.
Right? So you got to have, so you got to have all kinds of screwy finishes and and dudes running in to keep it interesting.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I think probably part of the reason why the crowd was into the beginning, you know, was because like that, like seeing Brett out there, like you didn't know what was going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, like we didn't see that stuff back then. So like to have Brett come out and, you know, call out Shawn Michaels for his little pussyfoot injury and talk to The Undertaker like he wasn't a undead mortician, Wild West wizard.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know? Like, you know, like we didn't see that stuff then.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the crowd probably was into that and was like, you know, and especially once he got powerbombed, you know, so then they were into the beginning of that. So I think there is, like, we don't like it. We didn't want to see it. And especially looking back, you're like, what was that?
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's the problem.
To think about it in context of the time, maybe. You know, it added a little something. It added to the spectacle of the WrestleMania main event.
So it definitely felt like this was like, we're bridging into the Attitude Era right here.
Yeah.
It's not quite there, but it's blooming.
Right.
It's blooming right here, and you can tell it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was the I Quit match. I mean, this was the Bloodstone night, so you know what I
mean?
Yes, like,
yes. This was the night that made Stone Cold, like, really take off. This was, so this was, it was happening. So, let's go ahead and roll into 1998 for WrestleMania 14, which was Undertaker versus Kane. That's gotta be Kane! By God. All right, so did you guys watch the little video package before the match? The like did the whole recap thing?
So I noted specifically that this was the first time we get that like movie trailer video package detailing the
It's a good call. That's a good call. Yeah. I didn't really think of that. Well, also I feel like this is the first time.
And it was 5.5 minutes. Go ahead.
It was really long. Like, they covered every little bit of this story.
Yep.
But this was
as
like,
well they should.
This was a big story for Taker. This was a big story at the time. This was the... Is this, like, his first, like, true feud going into WrestleMania like this? I don't feel like any of these
No, he feuded
other...
all those guys.
Yeah, but, like...
I mean, but they were wrestling feud. They weren't... So this is the first modern feud.
Okay, gotcha.
But, I mean, but you gotta remember... you know,
so this is
Giant Gonzalez attacked him in the middle of the Royal Rumble.
That's true.
And beat him up like two or three times between
them. So this is the first time it feels like a personal kind of like...
This is just the first time it's what we think of as a feud now.
Yeah.
That's fair.
The first time it comes off as
cinematic. You're right. It is.
Okay.
But this was the first time we were getting feuds like that.
It's the reflection of the era changing.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's totally true.
Yes.
So I gotta say that this was when I watched this in person, like when I lived this feud, this was my everything when it came to wrestling. Because I was already a huge Taker fan, and I immediately came a big Kane fan when he came in. And, like, I was totally wrapped up in the storytelling they were doing here. I loved this stuff. And watching this whole video package back that, like, showed everything leading up to this match with, like, the false face turn of Kane joining his brother, and then, oh, it was a trick the whole time. Like, they did all of that stuff leading up to his first match at WrestleMania. And this match here is the first time that they actually fought, because Taker was, like, refusing to fight his brother and all that stuff. So, like, there's some serious tension and buildup going into this match, and it really makes it feel extra special, I think.
Well, man, this was I wrote down watching the video package, and this the full disclosure, I was not into this. This was the kind of stuff I was not into as a fan.
There was so many lightning bolts and fireballs and like magic effect. Like, there was some serious wizard mortician stuff happening
for sure
with both of them.
Yep. But if you take that stuff, like I did write, like, man, this is high art. Like, this is Shakespearean. You know, like we've got, you know, this guy who's attained, you know, this, I mean, he's the pinnacle, you know, I mean, this veteran, you know, king. I mean, he's this king of wrestling, the Undertaker, right? And all of a sudden, here comes this little peasant to tell him, like, oh, your brother's still alive, you know?
And
then, you know, the brother returns, and at first the brother wants to kill him, but then the brother is his friend, you know, then they're bond breaks through and they become brothers, and then, you know, oh no, it was all a trick the whole time to get you. Like, this is Shakespeare, man. Like, they
it's
were
good stuff.
Yeah, you know,
so good. It's so,
so
good.
I'll give it that. Hindsight, looking back, like, they were putting some real art together.
this is another thing too that I listened to Bruce Pritchard talk a lot about, and it really kind of made me reappreciate all of this, because he's real high on this. He's super proud of this. He had a lot of input on this, and he's real proud of all this.
As well, he should be.
And the way he talks about it, like, it made me kind of remember it real fondly. So I was real excited to get to this point in this podcast, because I wanted to see it all again. With that being said, the match starts with Pete Rose coming to the ring.
I want to mention too, like, we talked about the staying power of the Undertaker and how weird it is that gimmick works too.
Yeah.
And I mean, Kane is a direct offshoot of that, which wouldn't exist without the Undertaker to bring him in. But that's another one of those where it feels like it easily could have just been one of those moments. You know, I talked about how the Undertaker feels like it easily could have been like, well, it's he buries people, let's throw him out there.
Right.
And that could have came and went and nobody would have known the difference, you know? This is another instance where it's like, well, we need another monster for the Undertaker to fight, so throw Isaac Yankem into a mask, and he'll be his brother, and we'll run through that thing. And that could have been, you know, like, do you think at any point they were sitting in the back going, hey, this guy will be a mainstay for 20 years, you know? Probably not, would be my guess. But that, I mean, because of that storyline worked so well, because the Undertaker gimmick had worked so well, and it sort of pulled that right in, and then, you know, then Kane ended up being a guy who could work good enough.
I was going to say, give credit to Glenn Jacobs.
Oh, for
Jacobs
sure. Yeah,
too,
absolutely. Glenn took it
and ran with it, and he's a good, solid
worker. Because
just
like the Undertaker gimmick, a bunch of other people could have been under that mask, and it would have been a, you know, 2-month deal, and they'd have been out of there. But it's just so remarkable,
like,
to me to look back at this stuff and then know going into the future, like, man, like,
it was like a good reboot.
Yeah, totally.
So, sorry to interrupt.
Well done. Done much better than the Undertaker.
Yes. Because essentially it was the same thing, man. Yeah, you know, like, essentially, this was just like, oh, look, there's another Undertaker.
Yep. They had
this
another
one.
Undertaker?
Did you ever see that this is totally off subject, that I won't go into it long. Did you ever see that match between Jeff Jarrett and Sting with all the other Stings?
No, I've never seen it. It is so bad. I want to watch it, though.
Yeah. Check that out. I'm pretty sure it's on the network. We'll look it up sometime. It is straight terrible. We won't go into that.
All right. So
this is the first. Oh, Pete Rose. Yeah.
Let's start with the Pete Rose stuff. Because this became a running joke. So.
Yeah, but inexplicable.
Yeah.
The way they did that, because they bring him out to announce the match, essentially, and he just gets on. They're in Boston, so he just gets on the mic and just starts running the town down.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. They also announced him as sure to be future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, man.
But he immediately just starts getting booed out of the building. Everybody's going crazy. And then Kane, you know, the Kane music hits, and he comes down, and with Paul Bearer, Paul Bearer looks so weird to me when he's not all
made up.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Because he's just like, he should be pale or something, you know?
Christina was like, who's the blonde guy? I was like, that's Paul Bearer.
I thought you were going to say Paul Bearer looks so weird when there's an extra one of him out there.
He was big.
He was so big.
He was big.
But
no offense, love Paul, but man, he was. Ooh.
But Kane, you know, Kane gets right in the ring. Pete Rose gets scared. Boom. Tombstone, huge face pop.
Yeah.
4K.
Huge
pop. Yeah, humongous.
But then this became. How long did they do this?
But also designed to be that way.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like he came out and the crowd just turned against him because it was Boston. Like, he came out and started getting cheap heat.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I've heard them talk about on the podcast.
It was fun because I got all those jokes.
Pritchard, yeah. I heard Pritchard talk about on the podcast. Like, they fed him all that stuff to say. They're like, you know what I mean? Like, they wrote those lines for him. So, like, they knew he was going out there to get heat.
Yeah.
So weird.
Attitude era, man.
I guess.
God bless Pete Rose, man. He came in there and just took that tombstone like a champ.
Well, and then did it for several years to come. That became the WrestleMania running joke.
Because I thought he only did it twice. Did he do it more than that?
Yes.
Well, he did it. He did it at least. He did it the year he was the chicken.
He ran out in the chicken suit.
Wasn't that the next year?
And started attacking Kane. That's
so great. Maybe. Well, one year he got stink faced.
I just love that Kane's got a running WrestleMania feud.
Yeah,
Rose. That's the best.
That's Kane's undefeated streak.
We're not.
That's Kane's undefeated streak. Yeah.
We're not doing a big red streak easy. So
yeah, okay.
Maybe you're not.
Well, we've got at least one more of these. So.
Yeah. Undertaker's entrance.
Yeah.
Druids. We
got
the Druids.
Yep.
And the crowd is way into it. Yeah. Like, they are just super, super into this.
And that music, like the Druids music.
Oh, yeah.
That was, awesome.
It was so good. And he came out without the coat and the hat for the first time. It was the robe.
Yeah, the big robe with the
collar.
Big,
huge collar. And that's what I was exactly like the image I had in my mind where I was saying earlier, like, they start to get a little overdone. It's like a huge collar never did it for me.
Yeah. Although I did write down iconic entrance because that shot of him walking underneath the Druid pyres is one of those shots that we see over and over and over again in all of the recaps and video packages and everything. And immediately after that, I wrote down iconic face-off.
Yeah.
Because that shot of him face-to-face with Kane is another one of those things that we see on repeat and have ever since this happened. So this is kind of a big match in, like, Taker's career, like his WrestleMania career. A lot of things that you see in all these recaps come from this match, I feel like.
Yep.
So getting into the match, you were talking about how good Taker and Diesel were moving.
Yeah.
I feel like that could be said here, too. I was...
Really?
Dude, the way that Taker launches into, like, those punches at the beginning of the match, like I love this because there's so much intensity at the beginning of this match because it's all the pent-up frustration. Like, there's good storytelling in the beginning of this match because they have that stare down and the bell rings and Taker immediately just starts walloping on Kane.
Yeah.
Like, crazy. And Kane's kind of no-selling it a little bit and Kane will try to give something back and Taker, boom, right back on top of him. And he's just pouncing on him and I loved it. I loved every bit of that because I was just like, get him, yeah! You know, it was one of those things you were just like, I was really getting into it, man, because I was like...
If you're wondering, he was definitely actually screaming that the screen.
Oh, you know it, dude.
20-some years later.
This match turned me into a 14-year-old, for like he was saying about Diesel earlier. Yep. This match did it to me. I was way into this.
Well, I feel really bad because I think this match sucks.
Okay, go ahead. That's fine.
You're right. They started real hot. I thought they started real hot, and then I just thought this match just fizzled straight out.
Really?
I thought I kept thinking. I thought Kane looked really green. Which Kane was young here. And so I don't know if Kane looked really young. He looked really inexperienced. He looked like a rookie, I thought.
Yeah,
which could be because he was young and still kind of a rookie. Could also be he was not quite, I mean, this was the first time he got to do too much, like the first time he had to do this much as Kane.
Like, he's mostly just been choke-slamming a tombstone.
And by far the biggest moment of his career.
Hitting Vader in the face with a wrench. giant monkey wrench.
I gotta, that reminds me, there's totally a line that King says, when Kane's coming into the ring to confront Pete Rose. King says, "Kane's the kind of guy who will show you a hammer lock with a real hammer." And I just thought that was totally absurd.
It's a great line.
But like I was saying, like, I mean, by far the biggest thing he's done in his career, right here, and easily could be the only big thing he ever did. Like, going into that, you don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know that you're going to be
his
for
first Mania.
Years,
Yankum was never at a WrestleMania. Fake Diesel was never at a WrestleMania. So his first Mania, in a huge high profile match with the Undertaker. Yep.
So, I mean, there's a lot to be said for the idea of butterflies.
No judgment on him, just an observation.
Yeah, and that's the thing with it. I will say about that, because I liked the match also, but there were definitely. I think I would land right in the middle of you guys, I think. I mean, I think these guys did move well, and you could tell that they're both good workers. There's just moments where everything looks a little off, from either of them. And you can lay a lot of that on Kane, because Undertaker has been there seven times at this point.
I wrote down a couple spots specifically.
But, one where, like, they tried to get a little too acrobatic with, like, Kane jumper, Undertaker jumping onto Kane's shoulders, and, like, clearly doesn't
Weird was... Well, first of all, he got up there quick. He just straight jumped up onto Kane's shoulders, and I was like, "Whoa, what are you doing there, big guy?"
Yeah, like, the speed and the height were good, but he didn't have the balance. Kane didn't have the hold, and then he just kind of threw him down onto his face.
I wrote, "They tried."
Coming over the ropes and through that table, which, man, that table broke.
Yeah,
that's another one where it looked real awkward.
That dive was nuts. Like, he had so much height on that dive, and the way he hit that table looked awful.
And then Kane just picked up that table chunk and just chucked it on him.
Well, also I kept laughing because they showed it a million times, and every time you see it, you see the one Spanish announcer slow motion fall out of his chair every time, which was cracking me up because he's doing that thing where he's like, whoa, 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 and then he's gone.
Hugo Savinovich, man.
Yeah. It was amazing. It was so amazing. I wrote down the sleeper hold spot. I wrote, I'm starting to notice a trend with these matches because literally the beginning into that was very similar to what we saw with Sid before.
Yeah.
I felt like once we got past the hot stuff at the very beginning, it kind of immediately felt like a repeat of what we saw with Sid and Taker.
Yes, I agree.
Because then they even, after the crazy table spot, once they get back into the ring, we do the tombstone attempt with the switcheroo again, except, like you were saying earlier, Kane is not as stable as Sid.
Yeah. Right.
Like they switch it over, and Kane's like, almost drops Taker, and then hits his tombstone, which I gotta say, Kane's tombstone was never good.
He holds him too high.
It's really fast. It doesn't, I don't know. It's something about it just doesn't look as good as the way Taker always did his. It was really noticeable in that video package when, like, they did that montage of all the tombstones he hit.
Yes.
A lot of them looked real bad. Real bad. Especially the one he hit on Vader, where Vader was a mile off the mat.
Well, Vader was so weird. Like, he was so compact that, like, you picked him up and he didn't have... You would have had to hold him around the thighs
in order to
get his head even close to the mat.
You're totally right.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong, but that one might not have been.
You're right.
But I agree with you, Kane. I never liked Kane's...
Tombstone.
Yeah.
It was right about here that I wrote down they're lost again. Because there's totally, like, this whole moment where, like... it was after that tombstone thing. It's like Kane got completely lost and didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. Because Taker got up and they have this real weird, awkward, like, stare.
Yeah.
And then, like, Taker throws
a punch.
Like,
somebody's waiting for something.
Yeah, like, Taker throws a punch and then Kane kind of punches him at the same time. And then they both kind of stare at each other again. And then they do this weird spot where Taker throws a boot. that Kane was obviously supposed to duck, but doesn't.
Yep.
So the boot just kind of like brushes off of him and he no-sells it. And then he turns around and Taker hits him with the choke slam. And like that whole exchange, like they got to the end of that and they hit that choke slam and you can almost see it on Taker's face like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like that was okay. Let's take a time out here for a minute. We need to get our footing back because every little bit that led into that was like real, real off.
I will say it's fun this entire time. We're ignoring the fact that Paul Bearer is running around the ring just screaming, "You're a murderer!
I know.
You're a murderer, Undertaker!"
He's so loud too. And every time the camera's anywhere near him, his face is all up in the camera screaming, and oh my God.
He's a murderer.
He's amazing, dude.
They did that bit where Undertaker got thrown out one point early, and Paul Bearer just comes over and just starts doing these like flail kicks on him or whatever.
It's the worst stomps ever. Yeah. They're the worst stomps ever. You got anything else that you want? Because we're at the kind of the go-home area. All right, here.
So I said earlier Kane looked really green.
Yeah.
By the time we start to get to the end, I think Taker looks old and tired and out of
really?
Shape.
Really?
I thought he did. Wow. I didn't think it looked like he was doing that good of a job selling. I think it just looked like he was not in shape at that point.
Oh.
You know?
Okay.
I know we kind of talked the other day about how, you know, because we're not real far away from the American Badass. And by the time
Isn't
he's...
Isn't that crazy how close we are to that already?
Yeah. And by the time he gets to the American Badass, or when he first starts in the American Badass, he's carrying a lot of extra weight.
Yeah.
So, you know, I almost feel like he's probably... Whatever led to that weight gain, well, you know what I mean? Whether it's an injury, whether he was just tired, whether he was just not in the gym. Well, you know what? I feel like I see that here.
We're going to hit the ministry phase, though, first, right?
Yeah,
I feel like he was in real good shape in the ministry. But I don't know. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and the ministry doesn't go that long. So,
no, it doesn't. It's not very long.
Yeah.
So he hits Kane with the tombstone finally, which I wrote was gross because it was a pretty nasty looking tombstone. And the announcers make a huge deal because Kane kicks out.
Uh-huh.
Kane kicks out, and like they actually say the words "nobody's ever kicked out before." I don't know if that's true, but they said it a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever kicked out of that move before. Or nobody's ever kicked out of the tombstone.
Which I'm pretty sure Hogan did.
That sounds right.
I'm pretty sure Hogan did.
That doesn't work for me, brother.
Yeah. But other than that, they're probably right.
So he hits him with a second tombstone, and Kane kicks out again, and we get a lot of, by God! Like JR's going full
this
JR
is,
at this,
this is
moment.
Full JR. This is vintage JR, man.
Full JR is happening right now. So then he just gets up after that, and we get a third tombstone pile driver, which finally puts him away. Which we had that weird slow count in the last match.
Yep.
The count was fast on this one.
Yep.
It was like boom, 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 bing, 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 and Kane kicked out on the three.
Yeah.
So I was
which
like,
I liked.
I liked that too because they were really trying to build him as a monster, and they were showing that he's just gonna keep kicking out. I didn't get the fast count. I don't know if that was just. It just happened that way, but it was noticeably a fast count. I didn't quite understand why, but then that just led to a post-match beatdown. Taker won, but then Kane and Paul Bearer beat him up after the match, and then hightailed it. So.
Which I want to say on the multiple finishers thing, real quick, that is done pretty well, I think, at least from a story perspective, because you said, they're building this guy up as a monster. He's got to hit him multiple times. To my recollection,
back to back too.
Yeah, to my recollection, you hadn't seen a whole lot of multiple finishers yet, but they weren't doing the back and forth thing. They weren't doing that Ring of Honor style where they're hitting them back and forth and just basically bouncing back up or anything like that. Like these were all taking their toll. They were just selling the fact that it took a bunch of them, like an inordinate amount, for it to actually work. But they didn't do anything to kill the move.
Right.
You know, it was building the guy, not destroying the move.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated the way that was kind of pulled off there.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I didn't mind that. I thought the end is where this all, I thought the match had really fallen apart by then. I was kind of bored with it. And then they go into the go-home. So they do the three tombstones, barely get the count. And then Kane gets right up and attacks him and basically leaves him laying. I have two thoughts that I want to finish this match off with.
Sure.
The first is just kind of commentary overall. the one thing that does kind of get me with wrestling, and you know how much I love wrestling. Yeah. Okay, you know what it means to me. This is a situation where we've got two men, two monsters in a family murder revenge blood feud, right? And like, you know, one guy burned down the house and like the family died and the brother came back from the dead and and they're gonna settle their beef in this, whoever gets the three count first, you know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those times. And the reason I was not a fan of this stuff is, like, you know, it gets to that point where it's, you know, how far can I take that suspension of disbelief? You know, yeah, I've seen Kane at this point cave in the side of Vader's face with a giant, you know, wrench, a giant monkey wrench. But he's gonna come have a wrestling match with his brother who murdered the whole family. You know what I mean? Like it's just tough for me to suspend that disbelief. Yeah. But that's neither here nor there. That could be a critique on a lot of things in wrestling. I get that. So the end I did not like, and I think my two things about the end. I think one, they kind of tried to have it both ways. Like, they wanted the Undertaker to win, but they wanted Kane to go out on top.
That's totally right.
And that's
wanted.
You know, and I think that was indicative that they didn't know how to pay this off. You know, like because they're sitting there going, you know, they're sitting in the writer's room going, so we've got this, you know, family murder revenge blood feud that they're going to, between these two monsters, that they're going to end with a three count. What do we do? You know, how do we make the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of indicative. Like, sometimes that suspension of disbelief plays a role, you know, that disconnect, like, plays a role in, like, how do we get, what do we do now? You know, right. What do we do now? You know, how do we deal with this? And obviously, you know, we know that they go on and they have Inferno matches and Buried Alive matches and whatever else.
Right.
I feel like they probably needed to jump straight to that with this thing, and it would have been better. It would have been better, you know, instead of just going like, well, this is the first one, let's just have a wrestling match. You know, now we got to have a wrestling match with this screwy finish because you guys don't know how to pay any of this off.
Yeah, maybe that Inferno match wasn't very good.
Oh well, yeah, the Inferno match is awful too. That's a whole nother. That's a whole nother. We're not gonna have the Inferno easy either.
Oh
so.
Yeah, the Inferno easy. Every Inferno match reviewed.
That's still one of my favorite designations in wrestling is Kane as the master of the Inferno match.
Yeah.
Even though he was the master of the Inferno match for years, despite the fact that he had never won one.
Yeah.
Like, well, they finally brought in a fully clothed guy that he could beat in one.
Yeah.
But that was years into it. But Taker, he was always the master of the Inferno match.
Taker lost a lot of casket and buried alive matches.
I was gonna say, I'm not sure Taker ever won a buried alive match.
But did they call him the master of the buried alive match?
I mean, I guess not, but that's his match. Like,
well, fair enough. You but know, like, but they designated
when
Kane.
When
like,
you're the Undertaker,
that was something they said. Every time they brought it up, he's the master of the Inferno match.
Bro, when your name is The Undertaker, you don't need to be The Undertaker, the master of the Buried Alive match. You are just The Undertaker. The Buried Alive match is your match.
Like, none of that is being argued, but like that wasn't a sell point either.
Oh, fair call, fair call.
The Inferno match was something they sold as, you know.
I don't know that anybody ever bought an Inferno match because Kane was the master of it.
I can't wait to see the master of the Inferno match master this match tonight.
Inferno match, whatever. Oh, Kane's in it? He's the master of the Inferno match. I'm there.
Oh my god. That's amazing. All right. Well, I think those are the only three matches we're going to talk about.
Those are
in
the three
episode,
for this week.
Which is a great rundown of matches. Honestly, I would recommend checking out all of these to make an opinion for yourself. I agree with you wholeheartedly that the Undertaker Kevin Nash or Undertaker Diesel match is just a fantastic, good wrestling match.
Yeah.
Great wrestling match.
One of the best ever. I think one of the greatest matches WrestleMania history.
Yeah.
Of the streak, just in general.
High praise.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I still very much enjoy the Undertaker Kane stuff. Now, there's a very, very big part of that that could be me reliving, my childhood of watching it or whatever. However, I feel like the entire story built around that match is amazing stuff, and it's at least worth going back and if you've never seen any of that stuff before, maybe dip into that a little bit.
Yeah, you can find it all on the network now.
That's some good Undertaker.
So you can go see it play by play, week by week, if you want.
So what is next on tap for the show?
All right, next on tap is WrestleMania 15, where we get The Undertaker versus the Big Boss Man inside a hell in a cell.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy.
Oh, that's Ministry Taker, too, right?
That's Ministry Taker.
Okay. So next year after this, he's in the ministry.
Yep,
wow.
The next year.
When you look at him in this context, it happens so quick.
Yeah.
It didn't, obviously, it's a whole year, but still, it's that's fast.
Yeah.
That's fast that this all happened. Okay.
Yep.
Move on.
Yeah. Then we're skip WrestleMania 2000. Taker was not there. To WrestleMania 17.
Okay.
Where we get the very first WrestleMania, very first WrestleMania versus Triple H match. The very first Undertaker versus Triple H match. And he's the American Badass by here.
So we've only got one more WrestleMania with him as the undead wizard mortician guy. and then he's going to be the American Badass.
Yep.
Crazy.
And then also WrestleMania 18, where he takes on the greatest of all time, Ric Flair.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome stuff.
Yeah.
So three matches to look forward to. So we got Big Boss Man, Triple H, and Ric Flair. Look at
the two.
Okay.
Two matches.
Two matches to look forward to. I'm just saying the quality.
Two of these things belong together. Two of these things are kind of the same.
Sorry, Ray Trailer. All right, guys. Well, hopefully you have enjoyed this show. It's been a lot of fun for me going back and watching these old Undertaker matches leading up to the big day, WrestleMania. If you guys want to follow us, I don't know where I'm going here. Sometimes I lose my mind. If you guys would like to follow the show, you can check us out on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Podbean, and Google Play for the audio version. It's just part of the Geek Easy Podcast feed. You can also check us out on YouTube at the Geek Easy Podcast. If you guys want to leave any comments or anything like that, otherwise, be sure to check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TheGeekEasyPodcast. Anything else you guys want to add for the end of this one?
Bong. No, that's good. Bong. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Rest in peace. Rest in peace.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of The Geek Easy Podcast.